The February 6th, first Monday edition of the PFF Forecast. That's because it is Super Bowl week. It's media day. We've got the normal Sunday night crew ready to rock. We're going to talk about the injury updates from media day, what we've learned, a little bit about where things are heading with the game in terms of lines are at, total spread, where some of the money is coming in, what if we're making anything out of that, and then our favorite angles for this this game thus far. And as promised, in-depth research on the most important prop in the history of all props. It is the national anthem. Let's rock. I look like a complete idiot in glasses and a hat, but I had to wear the hat. I could not wear the hat. I don't know if you can tell. If you're not watching this, you should go check out the YouTube because I'm sporting the first ever printing press merch. It is a hat with nothing but a printer on it. A little PFF logo on there. Can attest that they work. They're real. We've got a few that we've given away thus far in the Printing Press Discord. If you have not joined yet, there's still plenty of time. People in there are already on to like draft props. It's just absolutely amazing what the printing press is all about. So go and get in there and get yourself a hat. Arjun, we've been talking about some updates to some of the merch. I think that you're pretty excited about. We've got a hat coming out to Michigan. We'll get one out to Chicago and then out to where Ben, wherever you are, because you're just a traveling man. You know, we can't pin you down.
Yeah, I'm a rambling man, I guess. I don't know where I am either most of the time, thankfully. But it's not pretty. It's not Ann Arbor. It's not Chicago either, unfortunately, or New York. So.
It's not New Orleans either.
New Orleans. Ben was supposed to be in New Orleans this week. For the Tulane, what is the actual name of it, Brad? I was going to say
Tulane Pro Football Negotiation Competition.
That's what it is, Pro Football Negotiation Competition. Can't say NFL because you know then you get sued by Goodell. And Arjun, you and Tej actually were the first ever undergrad combo to be in the tournament. I heard that there was a script that was released, Brad. Can you, that didn't favor you, Arjun, unfortunately.
Yeah, I got the script early. You know, Arian Foster obviously exposed all the, you know, the conspiracies going on. That is part of it. That's folded into it. And, you know, I knew Arjun was going to come up short, but I was, hey, no one loses in a weekend in New Orleans. That's the best part about it.
And even though you guys are undergrads, you're 21 now. So you could, you know, go enjoy
which
it.
Totally matters in New Orleans. They totally check your ID at every bar. But you are 21. They actually are 21. So.
Yeah.
All righty. Let's start here. Today is Monday. We're changing our schedule up a little bit so that we can just be a little more in the know. Sunday night didn't feel like the right night to talk about things. So we're going to get some information today from Media Day. And so, Brad, let's start with you. We do see players kind of for the first time coming out of hiding today after the dead week. What did we learn?
Yeah, so a couple of big updates. I think right off the bat, L'Jarius Sneed, the slot cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs, will be playing in this game. You are going to see no Mecole Hardman in this game, but you will see Kadarius Toney. And then one that I think has a contrarian angle, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was activated off of IR, and I think that might have an effect on McKinnon and Pacheco props. And folks, when CEH was healthy, he was still doing nothing. So he will play, or he will suit up, I should say. But I don't think it's gonna, you know, I think the effect there might be actually helpful to some of the bets that we like going into this game without CEH on the roster.
Absolutely incredible. L'Jarius Sneed, he was questionable with a concussion, so he's good to go. He has been really good this year, 78.4 PFF grade, seventh most valuable cornerback in the league, according to PFF War. Kadarius Toney, an interesting player in this game. We thought he was going to be one of the players they would leverage against the Niners. He obviously got hurt early in that game. And then Juju, seemingly a guy that Pat has confidence in, but obviously got injured there, and he ended up going to MVS. So it just doesn't matter for Pat. And then Mecole Hardman, as you mentioned, is out. Arjun, anything that changes your mind, one way or another, or kind of there's an angle that you see with one of these players that you like?
Yeah, I was waiting for some of the Chiefs players, player props to come out, especially at the receiver position with Toney and Juju. I do think this will be somewhat of a big Juju game. Him being in the slot, that's kind of where the Eagles are weakest. Avonte Maddox is their weakest corner. Eagles love to play a ton of zone, and I think Juju is more of their zone beater guy instead of their man beater guy. I believe his line opened at like 32.5, I want to say, and that instantly got bet up to like 37.5. I think I got it somewhere in the middle at like 35, 36.5. That's definitely one angle I'm looking to get at, just the Juju props, because I think Eagles are going to dedicate a lot of their resources to stopping Kelsey. And with how much man they play, it's going to be Juju kind of sitting in those hook zones where Pat's going to have to find him on some of those curl routes, crossing routes. So I definitely like some of the Juju props now that he's been, it's been kind of said that he's going to be playing in this game.
What do you prefer, receptions, yards, any alt lines? Like, how are you thinking about playing those?
Yeah, I definitely like his receptions more than his receiving yards. 3.5, I mean, you only need 4 catches, and that's something where I think, especially if the Eagles pass rush is as good as it's been all year, I definitely think we'll see a lot of like quicker throws to Juju, and I kind of like the 3.5 more than like him having to get over 38, 39, or 37.5. So I think 4 catches is easily doable, and if they're playing from behind, I think you'll easily get that.
Ben, what about you?
I mean, okay, so I will say with the Juju angle, I mean, obviously, I think we're all in agreement that the Chiefs very much have to find somebody outside of Travis Kelce, I would say, to actually be able to, sustain some drives, because I do think he's going to get doubled. I do think he's going to get bracketed, and I do think that there's not going to be a ton of opportunities on the outside for any Chiefs pass catchers. So I do think, like, what they do in the slot is going to be really interesting. To me, I think they got to move past Juju. I mean, he hasn't been involved really whatsoever. I don't think he's gotten over his receptions or his receiving yardage number since Kadarius Toney has been in the fold. I know his receiving yardage number has, gone up from the opening of 32.5, but this was still a number that was at 48.5 last week. So he's still 10 yards shorter than where he was last week, but he just hasn't been involved, right? And I know that like the Avonte Maddox matchup is very much the spot that the Chiefs need to take advantage of. But if I'm Andy Reid and I have 2 weeks, a time frame to kind of scheme up some of these approaches, especially on their, scripted pass player, scripted play set, like Juju's not going to be the guy that I'm going to be targeting. I do think if you have a healthy Kadarius Toney, like maybe bringing him up a little bit, maybe he is playing closer to, 40 to 50% of the snaps as opposed to 30%. Maybe he is, a little bit more, involved early on, because he's very much the guy, I would say, outside of Travis Kelce and outside of, the running backs that I think you want to kind of get the ball in his hands early and see if he can make a couple plays after the catch, especially if Patrick Mahomes is going to be, I would say limited to the point where he's not really moving around the pocket as well as he was previously before the ankle injury. So I know the Juju bandwagon is kind of, I would say, getting hyped up already because of the slot matchup, but I very much would be surprised if he runs, over 30% of his routes from the slot. And if he doesn't hit like a higher number of slot routes, like I just don't see him winning too often against James Bradbury or Darius Slay. So I don't really have a strong play on Juju, but I don't think I'm at all confident enough to play anything on his over, I would say.
What about the quarterbacks, Brad? Because I've been, it's a couple of weeks and, you kind of forget about both quarterbacks and their injuries. Talking to a doctor, and we may actually have an opportunity to have a segment with him later in the week this week to get something more than what I can share. What Jalen Hurts was dealing with is something that generally takes a minimum of 6 weeks to heal. It's more serious than a shoulder separation. So, you know, that would kind of lead you to believe he's still not going to be healed yet. And of course, Mahomes, I don't think anyone expects his ankle to be 100%. Any insight there, you know, as far as the quarterbacks go?
Yeah, so like we talked about, I was saying how I think Mahomes might be the healthier of the two quarterbacks in this game. We talked about, you know, A.J. Brown, he missed him deep on a deep ball, but then he also underthrew Quez Watkins one time, underthrew Devontae Smith, and allowed a pass breakup from, I want to say, Charvarius Ward on the outside that could have been a big gainer. I think it's one of those things, and Hurts himself has said, like, I'm not going to be healthy for this game. I've accepted that. I have to do what I can do and work through it. But I think it's almost like a Josh Allen thing with his elbow, different injury, but you can play with it, you can manage it, but at the end of the day, you're not going to be as sharp and as accurate as you are. And I'll tie this in, you know, now with two of my favorite plays, maybe in this entire game. One of them is Pat. There's a lot of head-to-head props I really like, and these are two of them. So one is Patrick Mahomes minus a half touchdown pass. Not touchdown, touchdown pass, minus a half is minus 110. Patrick Mahomes had more touchdown passes this season than Jalen Hurts has in his career, first of all. So I know it's a, you know, a flashy number, but that's the case. So, you know, he had 45 this year. Hurts had 24. Yes, Hurts did miss some time. But nevertheless, I mean, I think game skip regardless, you're going to see when the Chiefs get in the red area, they're still going to throw the ball, whereas the Eagles, as we've seen, we're going to have some more design runs. They're going to pound the rock against this Chiefs susceptible run defense. You know, I think even if the Eagles do have a great game, or even if they are coming from behind, if they get close and it's not an explosive, which there probably should be a couple to A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, they're still going to go back to their bread and butter in the red zone. So I like that one. Or if you like a different angle, Patrick Mahomes minus 45 and a half passing yards is minus 120. This one, in some ways, I almost like more because I think regardless of games, look, if the Chiefs are down, it's a block. Even if they're up in this game or up early, I don't think they're going to fully take their foot off the gas. I think Andy Reid has been in these positions too long to know that he's not going to just let up and not, you know, continue to throw the ball. So I think those head-to-heads are very, very enticing, and I'll get to one more head-to-head later. But those, there's a lot of interesting – I'm not sure I agree with a lot of the head-to-head props that I've seen so far out there.
Yeah, those are both interesting. You know, getting into a little bit of what we've seen thus far, so right now, the Eagles are still the favorite, minus 1.5, minus 124 on the money line, over under. The total is at 50.5 here. There might be a little bit of difference between the different books. If you shop around a little bit, for example, on FanDuel, it's 50.5. Over is minus 115. The under, minus 105. That's minus 110 to both sides on the spread. And it seems to be the case, and I've talked to a few people out there over the course of the last week, that pretty much every sizable bet has come in on the Eagles thus far. And talking to someone that you know, kind of sees this happen on a day-to-day basis at the sports books, you know, we're sort of hypothesizing why that might be. And I'm curious what your guys' thought is there. What I was sort of thinking about was when people are placing a bet, now remember it's just 1.5. So you're kind of getting 1.5 points in either direction. It's not really that meaningful. So you're kind of sitting there and you're thinking, okay, well, who's got a better chance of kind of dominating this game? And when you look at it, you can see a pathway to the Eagles, you know, winning by 2+ scores, right? The physical dominance at the line of scrimmage, the, you know, way that they've dominated their opponents thus far, they're totally healthy. And I've got to think that's contributing to a lot of these early bets that we're seeing on the Eagles. Do you guys buy that? Is this at all meaningful, you know, to you guys? How are you sort of reading what we've seen from an action perspective thus far on the game?
I would jump in real quick, and I'm sure Ben has more on this, just very quickly. I've had a conversation one, not pertain to this game or in this year, but talking about how, you know, be wary of early week action when maybe limits are a little bit shorter, and then these sharps or whatever you want to call these people, you know, maybe bet it's not going to cross the key number or anything, so it's not really relevant here, but, and then they bet against their own action and maybe, you know, get over a key number, or just, you know, think they get good value in betting a, you know, kind of built-in mini hedge. But anyway, that's just one thought I had.
Yeah, I do think specifically like with limits and the Super Bowl, it's a little bit, you know, further off, I would say. Or, you know, like I think we've had pretty high limits for the majority of time since the numbers kind of initially opened. So I do think that the line movement in the Eagles direction is very much valid. But I keep going back to it, and I do agree with you, George. Like this seems very much like a spot where the Eagles are either going to win by two touchdowns or the Chiefs win a close game, right? And there's like very few ideas or approaches or narratives that are really going to play into the Chiefs kind of blowing the doors off of the Eagles, right? Like even if Jalen Hurts has like a bottom 30 percentile outcome, like there's still paths to them being successful rushing the football and not necessarily like, you know, really controlling the game, but still very much being, I would say, relevant with the possession to potentially, like, you know, win the game at the end if they still don't get that dominant performance from Jalen Hurts. So I think, you know, the idea is, you know, handicapping how valuable Patrick Mahomes is in relationship to, you know, Jalen Hurts and the rest of the Eagles, since they do have basically, you know, every other advantage at every single position outside of quarterback and tight end. But I think when you're looking at that, like the public is very much going to gravitate towards things that, you know, we would probably say don't matter as much as the quarterback position.
I haven't been betting as long as you guys have, like, at all. And one thing I feel like I have heard from George and when Eric was still doing the show is, like, I feel like the Philly syndicates or whatever syndicates that are, like, Philly fans, like, they'll lay large amounts of money, like, on Saturday or Sunday before, like, the Eagles game. So maybe that's the case here. Again, I don't really know, like, how things work during the Super Bowl week, because obviously you have 2 weeks to bet the game, and you know, maybe money comes in late from them like it does every week. But that would be like my theory on why like the line hasn't really moved since at 1.5.
Yeah, I also Ben and Brad, you were sort of hinting at it, but like I kind of teed this up to sort of say like none of these big bets really matter. So like there's plenty of people out there with a lot of money who have no idea what they're doing with it, who decide it's the Super Bowl, I'm going to go place a big bet. Just because you have a lot of money, right? Like I think owners in like professional sports are a good example of this. Just because you made a lot of money doing thing over here, and then you come over and you spend your money over here, does not make you smart at the thing over here, right? Like right. You know, you see this all over the place. And so just because it's, you know, the Super Bowl, I think, is a very interesting kind of experiment with humankind, right? Because you just get such a massive amount of people in the United States who are betting on this game. And, you know, it's a very interesting kind of look into the American psyche. But just because these people with lots of money are placing these bets does not mean they have any clue what they're doing, because it's the Super Bowl. And I would actually say that, you know, most people that have a clue what they are doing in the Super Bowl are not betting the spread, right? There are so many, Brad, to your point, like there are so many other ways. And yeah, the limits are going to be a lot lower, but because there are so many other ways to bet this game, you can get more cash down. And if you're going to find inefficiency, it's going to be in those other markets, right? It's going to be props. It's going to be those head-to-heads. They should just take, you know, 100K sides on the national anthem. They'll never do that because they're scared of it. But
George, just to go off of that, like one perfect example that's not even the more exotic stuff. You mentioned it. If you want to bet Chiefs money line, or you did earlier in the week, you should have just bet Patrick Mahomes MVP, right? Like that's just one kind of high level example of like, yeah, and I think I'm blanking on who it is, but one of my favorite followers on Twitter, he said, I haven't bet the spread in the Super Bowl in a very long time. Like there's so many other ways to win money on this game. So yeah.
Especially when it's 1.5, right? Like what are you doing? You're sitting there, you got 1.5 and you're like, ah, shoot, man, I hope, you know, the Chiefs only lose by a point, you know, it's like, that's no fun. But one angle that I was thinking about that, and I'm excited, we'll talk to Judah later this week about some of the live angles here. But I do think people consider the game from the beginning, right? And they think about all of the advantages the Eagles have from a health perspective, up front, you know, especially at the edges with Hassan Reddick and Josh Sweat. But if it gets to a close game in the fourth quarter, right? So like if the Eagles run away with it, then they're running away with it, right? That's happening early in the game. Right. If you fast forward to the fourth quarter and it's within a score, like where do the odds now shift, right? What are the chances that if it's a close game, Jalen Hurts is playing really well. Like, maybe in a normal situation, they're moderate. In this situation, I'm not sure they are, because you could see the Eagles getting out to an early lead, them not being able to kind of hold on to it. Patrick Mahomes doing what he does, bringing it back. Now it's a close game in the fourth quarter. In my perspective, like, I'm waiting for that to happen personally, because I'm not sure it'll be baked in. I have infinitely more confidence in Mahomes than I do Hurts on any normal day, and in this day in particular. So that was just one of the angles I was kind of thinking about. Like, I'm not going to bet the spread pre-flop, but as the game goes on, you know, kind of monitoring that. Any thoughts around kind of either that angle or something similar?
Yeah, George, so that made me think of something, and obviously a live market might be the best way to go about that, but I was having a conversation with BetQL this morning, and they were talking, there's a prop for specifically just, are there going to be more points in the first or second half overall? But also, what I like is the Eagles, they're plus 110 to score more points in the first half. And, like, again, if you like the Eagles in this game, we know they're, you know, one of the best scripted play teams in the NFL, out of the second quarter king, they're the most, you know, and then if they have a lead in this game, they're going to just try to run the ball a ton and just sit on this thing in the second half. So it's only plus 110, but again, kind of a creative way to get a little bit of value if you like the Eagles in this game. Odds are, if they're going to win, they're going to score a lot in the first half and then just be able to hold on.
Yeah, that's very much, I think, like, the popular narrative. I do think, like, specifically when you're looking at matchups, I know, you know, George touched on a little bit on, like, the Eagles edge play, but I also think, in arriving at that scenario of the Eagles potentially, like, playing from ahead, like, I know, you know, we obviously don't think rushing the football matters, like, a whole lot, but I do think if the Eagles are very much capable of, like, establishing their will, especially in the edge positions, you know, with guys like Lane Johnson, you know, kind of dominating, like, Frank Clark, George Kalafkas, like, if that happens on early down specifically and in the scripted pass, scripted play set, like, that's going to be the spot where you're very much like, okay, the Eagles, unless Patrick Mahomes has some brilliant comeback, you know, are very much going to run away with it. So I do think, you know, the initial approach to how the Chiefs are going to play defensively, and if they are going to try and force Jalen Hurts to beat them, you know, it is very much, I would say, kind of like the in-game angle that, you know, I'm going to be watching and then very much choosing, like, what side of this do you actually want to end up on, and say, and I do think it's very much like Eagles alt spread at that point, you know, or the Chiefs money line at, like, a plus price, I would say.
All right, let's get into our favorite angles. I was just looking at MVP. There are a couple that I like. So I was checking out what it was. Let me just say this. So Mahomes at MVP is plus 130. Hurts is also plus 130. Now, you can't bet the no here, but, like, I don't know that I agree with this, and I have a take on kind of the Eagles here in a second. Travis Kelce is 16-1. Just out of curiosity, like, what has to happen for Travis Kelce to win MVP over Patrick Mahomes?
I would say, like, Mahomes, however many passing touchdowns he has, all of them, or maybe all n minus one, is thrown to Travis Kelce at the outset.
Does 9 for 180, basically. Yeah, that's basically.
I mean, does Kelce have to, like, play quarterback for half the game? Like, I just don't. I don't know. Maybe I'm high here, but
I mean, okay, if Kelce's the only one, though, like, that in some ways could potentially happen, right? Like, if he's the only one that's actually winning this matchup, and the rest of the Eagles defense is holding steady, like, I do think a 9 for 180 game could get Kelce there. Yeah, that's
here's relevant. So last Super Bowl, Cooper Kupp had 8 catches, 92 yards, 2 touchdowns. But I also think there was a narrative built in that last drive. He had, like, 4 catches for 40 yards and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then 4 Super Bowls ago, Julian Edelman, 10 catches, 141 yards, no touchdown. So the numbers there for Kelce are, I would, you know, better performances than both of the last 2 times a pass catcher won that award.
Yeah, I just think Mahomes on an ankle with all, like, I don't know. Anyways, Arjun, let's go to you first. We'll kind of go around the horn here with our favorite angles. Arjun, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, so leading into this episode, I have placed some, like, novelty props that I think could be worth talking about. One of my favorite ones is first team to call a timeout, and we are going with the Kansas City Chiefs here. I think it was, like, minus 115. I got it on Bet Online. maybe it's on some of the legal books, but I would play this up to like minus 135. And it's pretty simple. The Chiefs are called the first time out in 15 of their 19 games this season. The Eagles are only at 7 of their 19 games. We know how good of a game manager of a coach Nick Sirianni is in the game management department. Andy Reid, while I think 2 weeks will do him wonders in the game preparation standpoint, I don't think, you know, that kind of helps you in the game management standpoint. And we could see like a privileged Andy Reid timeout on the first drive of the game as they enter the red zone on 3rd and 2 or 4th down as he struggles to make a decision on 4th down. So I really like the first timeout prop. And I can give another one unless we want to go like an around the horn and talk about a different one.
I like that. Let's keep going around the horn though. The novelty props are the best, by the way. If you have not, if this is your first time betting on the Super Bowl, just go spend like 2 hours going through all the props. I mean, they have some, if one day we'll get these for every single game. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, there was one of our favorite bets was, I think it was over under number of sacks in the game. Actually, that was last year with Burrow and the Bengals and the Rams. Those things are just fantastic to play. All right, Ben, let's go to you next.
Yeah, so I do think, you know, outside of the rushing ability for the Eagles, I do very much like the angle of Dallas Goedert kind of being the focal point of their passing offense. So I do like him, you know, specifically from, you know, an alt number perspective. I do think him 70 plus receiving yards, you know, given the Jarius Sneed is going to be in the fold and very much going to be, you know, playing the slot receiver. I do think they scheme Goddard around enough to the point where he is going to probably see the majority of the target share. I do think he's probably going to sit right around the 25 to 30% range. If he does 70 plus, 80 plus yards and a touchdown, we have seen the Chiefs. I would say, you know, I think we have them rated a little bit higher than perspective from a coverage. I do think they're fourth basically from PFF's coverage grade. They dropped to 16th. When covering tight ends, I just think that's going to be the vulnerable and weak spot for them. And if you do expect this game, I would say to stay close and maybe go over the total. I think it's going to be a lot of Goddard, I would say, towards the end of the game, especially. So him anytime touchdown, 70 plus receiving yards, very much how I think the Eagles are going to attack them offensively.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, we mentioned this, I think, before, but the Chiefs were dead last in EPA per play allowed between the numbers. And he's attacks the seams over the middle. That is his area. So I like that. I'm going to go back to a novelty prop. I mentioned this before the show a little bit. But anyway, there is you can bet on, will the opening kickoff be a touchback or not? And the odds are basically just reflective of the implied odds. So during the regular season, kickers about 62 to 65% of the time, it's a touchback. And the other third is not. And it's, I think it's minus 165 and plus 135, whatever it is. So there's an explanation from Pat McAfee as to why 17 of the last 20 going into last year, so or 18 of the 20, whatever it was, it's almost every time it is not a touchback, because what he was saying is before every game, normal game, the coaches for both sides will massage the ball and wear it down and try to make it more malleable. But because in the Super Bowl, what they do with the opening kickoff ball is they immediately grab it and just take it to Canton right away. They don't do that because they don't want the ball to be all squished down and whatever. So they want to keep it clean and pristine. Because it's very, very hard to kick a touchback with a ball that hasn't been kind of, you know, massaged a bit. So I think you're getting plus money on something, like I said, 18 in the last 21. I'm not trying to use the, you know, that means it's 18 in the last 22. I just saw that stat out there. But nevertheless, it is, you're getting plus money on something that's been historically very much in favor of, you know, not being a touchback.
Has that moved at all? I feel like enough people watch McAfee's show that
you'd think
he
so.
He was on it last year right too. Yeah, I think it moved quite a bit actually last year, but I haven't because he actually did say the same thing last year, whatever, and the juice changed quite dramatically. But I haven't looked at it, I guess, closely this year. I think looking at just league average and where both kickers are, like, it seems like touchback is very much the correct side if there's not like an outside angle that's working opposite of those numbers, I would say, for sure, which is very much the McAfee angle, I would say. So
what about just the simple fact that like everyone wants to be a hero and like opening kickoff of the
everyone wants to have the Devin Hester opening kickoff.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Especially it's Sky Moore, who's trying to like earn a roster spot out there, you know?
Yeah, what does he have to lose besides the football?
Nothing.
Where do you see that? What's the
DraftKings? You can get +135 on no touchback.
The no touchback syndicate is what. What this is shaping up to be. Okay, I'm gonna go to MVP. I actually think you guys made a nice point around Kelce, so I'm not gonna throw shade at Travis Kelce. But I think there's some interesting ones down the chain here. Okay, you know, if you're gonna bet, as you mentioned, Ben, like if you're gonna bet Chiefs money line, just bet Mahomes +130 to win MVP. The favorites are not particularly interesting, but a couple of angles that I like here. The first is, if the Eagles win this game, I like them winning the game not because of Jalen Hurts, right? I like some other kind of mechanisms by which they win the game. So looking down, you mentioned Dallas Goedert. I think he's a really interesting one where he could be a guy that just dominates, you know, over the middle of the field. And, you know, maybe Hurts has a fumble or something like that. He is 60-1, but I like going even further down. So this is, I think, hilarious. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is 120-1. Kenneth Gainwell is 130-1. Kenneth Gainwell is like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, might as well be a poster on the sideline at this point. Like, he's not getting any run in this game. Kenneth Gainwell, people love Miles Sanders because he scored a couple of times. Kenneth Gainwell has been, you know, their better receiving back, has been a really good runner of the football as well. He's an interesting long shot. But here's my favorite one. This is kind of a novelty, but I mentioned that Jalen Hurts has a bit of a shoulder. Would there be anything more Philly than Jalen Hurts getting injured, Gardner Minshew coming in and winning the football game? Okay. Gardner Minshew is 150-1 to be Super Bowl MVP. It would be the most Philly thing ever. Okay. To win two Super Bowls because backups came in and won the Super Bowl. Like just that. Saying I've seen it happen. Seen it happen before. Bit of a novelty one, but the other one that I think is interesting on the Philly side, again, because I like them winning with, you know, someone other than Hurts winning MVP. You look at Hassan Reddick, huge mismatch against Andrew Wiley. If they win this game, it'll be seen as because they're able to beat Mahomes. And so someone who perhaps gets a sack fumble. Now, the only caveat here is Mahomes is really hard to sack, right? He just does not take sacks. And so for that reason, I actually think just having one sack would, you know, or a really impactful one could kind of get the job done. So those are a couple of angles I like on MVP.
I know we're going around the horn, but I just want to reemphasize because I was going to have that one. So people are going to say, look, it hasn't been a defensive player in a long time. When it is a defensive player, look at the last two times, Von Miller against the 15-1 Carolina Panthers and their very good offensive mm-hmm. Cam Newton, and then Malcolm Smith, the linebacker for the Seahawks, when they went up against one of the best offenses of all time with the Denver Broncos. And then to the sack point, totally spot on. But Hassan Reddick also leads the NFL in forced fumbles this year, and half of them are when he just gets the swat and the quarterback's hand is back.
That's right.
Right. So anyway, I agree with that one, so I want to jump in with that.
Thank you. Thank you for the support. Arjun.
Yeah, going back to a novelty prop, it's actually like a two-parter. It is going to be Chiefs to have the shortest field goal between the Chiefs and the Eagles in this game. It's a weird one, but I have my reasoning. So first of all, the Chiefs' red zone defense is horrific. They've allowed a touchdown 65.6% of – or their defense has allowed a touchdown on 65.6% of opposing drives that have entered the red zone. And as we know, the Eagles are probably the best team, if not the best team, at just converting of red zone trips to touchdowns. The Eagles defense on the other hand ranks 10th in allowing red zone trips to be turned into touchdowns. So they do a better job of kind of preventing offenses from scoring touchdowns once they enter the red zone. We also know that Nick Sirianni is probably the most aggressive coach in the NFL, goes by the math, trusts the model. And I think once he enters the red zone or just that low red area, anything 4th and 5 and shorter is going to be a go for them. And knowing that they play Patrick Mahomes, I'm sure their analytics team has probably told them, like, you need to be more aggressive than you normally are. And, you know, this is Andy Reid. Like, you know, he's going to kick field goals in this situation. He has changed up a little bit, but we saw him kick field goals multiple times against the Bengals in that low red area. So I think when you consider the game management part and just the and how good Philly's been in the red zone, I kind of like them to kick. I like the Chiefs to kick the shortest field goal. And on the second part, I like a fourth down conversion, longest fourth down to conversion to be over 2.5 yards, which I found on DraftKings, which I that's like one of my, also one of my favorite props, just because fourth and three, Eagles will go, fourth and four, Eagles will go. And if the Chiefs are playing from behind, they're going to be in fourth downs, I think, more often than not. And I give them a good chance to convert some of those.
I love that. Benjamin.
So I, one spot that we really liked last year, and kind of came through with the modeling, was longest punt, basically. And I'm trying to find that where it actually was. I think it was on Bet Online, basically. But I think the longest punt specifically for the Chiefs, over under 57.5 yards, decent juice on the under, minus 130, but very much, I would say, a spot where they're not going to kick at 57.5 yards. I think when we were doing a lot of the work last year for it, like, very much the range should be probably closer to like the 48 to 52.5 range. So you are getting roughly 5 yards of value on the longest punt. Obviously, Andy Reid is more likely to punt it in some of the situations that he's probably shouldn't be doing it, more so than Nick Sirianni. So the fact that they do have 5 yards or yards more than the Eagles does make some sense. But I still think that's pretty much way too high of a yardage number. I don't think it got anywhere close to that last season. The majority are average punts, basically, all go under this as well. So under 57.5, longest punt by the Kansas City Chiefs, I think has to be, you know, one of the best novelty bets and one of the best opportunities we're going to get from these ulterior markets that we don't normally get in a lot of these football games.
Digging all right, I'll go to a more normal bet, even though it is still a bit of a problem. But going back to the well on something we bet on in the Bengals game that played out exactly how we thought it would, and that is Patrick Mahomes over 25.5 completions, where, again, I'm not super concerned with game script as much as a lot of props. They're going to throw the ball under, and also I think it's a better matchup because the Bengals will play up on you. They get, I think, I mean, look, the Eagles get a ton of pressure, but I think Mahomes is going to get the ball out very quickly. And the Eagles play a lot of soft and off coverage, a lot of cover three, a lot of cover two, sitting back. I think that is, again, just a bet where they're going to want to get the ball out of his hands very quickly. And he'll, anyway, it was 37 completions against the Bengals. It flew over. I think it will. And then if they're down, you know, he might complete 15 passes in the fourth quarter if they're down in this game.
Yeah. We talked about that one, I think. Right after the game, right after the AFC championship, because we had both completions and attempts, I think, for Mahomes in that one. All right, where am I at here? I had a good one, and I can't. I don't want to get to the anthem quite yet. Guys, I watched so many Chris Stapleton music videos. Like, I was over here comparing, like, Chris Stapleton saying words to, like, Luke Bryan saying words. Really was quite a nightmare. All right, I don't know where I have this. Someone else go while I'm trying to find where I have this next.
So we
I found it. Sorry. Pause. This is fantastic. Player to record the reception first, McKinnon or Kenneth Gainwell? Kenneth Gainwell is actually plus 135. Yeah. On FanDuel, Pacheco played a career high passing snaps, in the game, a couple or more than a week ago. It's 25. He hadn't played more than like 17, got a career high number of targets and looked spry. I mean, he looked great. I would be surprised if they play McKinnon a whole lot in this game. Pacheco has way more juice. He's catching the ball. So to me, like, Pacheco's going to be out there for a little while. And I don't know, Miles Sanders, like, there's just something about in this game where I'm not sure this is a Miles Sanders game as much as this is a kind of Gainwell's game. So I like Gainwell there to catch the first pass before Jarrett McKinnon does. There you go. Arjun, any more from your side?
Yeah, I have one more that I was looking at, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles to record the longest play from scrimmage. It's going to sound weird. You know, normally the Chiefs are kind of this explosive offense, but I just think the Eagles just play a ton of zone, and it's all cover. It's a lot of quarters. It's a lot of cover six. They want to limit explosive plays. They have the corners to do it. Their pass rush is going to get home more often than not. So Mahomes isn't just going to have the time to sit in the pocket. And while I think he's the best in the league at manufacturing these type of like explosive plays when he's out of the pocket, the Eagles are just not going to give it to him. And I think they have been pretty disciplined with their rushes and like just understanding how teams or quarterbacks scramble outside of the pocket. So I think the Eagles, because the Chiefs, you know, will play a lot of cover one, I feel like, or even cover two, which Jalen Hurts can take advantage of. We've seen some of those deep throws across the middle of the field to Devontae Smith and up the seams to Dallas Goedert. And I gave the stat out last Wednesday, but Eagles have the highest rate of perfectly blocked runs of any team in the NFL. Chiefs have one of the lowest percentages allowed on defense in a bad way. So you could see a lot of runs where, you know, the O-line perfectly blocks a run and Sanders and or Gainwell are able to take some of those holes and turn them into like 30 or 40 yard gains. So I like the Eagles in that spot. And I think, you know, the Chiefs will have to kind of dink and dunk their way down the field.
Yeah, I actually, that one jumped, not that one specifically, but what jumped out to me was the longest completion basically of Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes both being at 37.5 yards. And I was like, At first, I think the same, you know, idea like you had, Arj, and I think everyone else have, like, you know, obviously the Chiefs, very explosive, had Patrick Mahomes, like, what's going on? But that line just seemed, I would say, somewhat fishy. And then, like, looking into it, like, you know, with Steve Spagnuolo for the Chiefs and, you know, the high cover two rate, I think they play cover two at, like, the third highest rate in football. That's been, you know, in some ways the only spot that's really held Jalen Hurts in check from a rushing perspective. So I do think we're going to see a lot of that, but we have seen him, I would say, be relatively successful against that coverage specifically. So I like it as well. I think it might come through a run, and I do like the angle of kind of pivoting more to, you know, longest overall yardage play as opposed to focusing on anything on the passing game. So that's definitely what I'm going to be adding as well. The one I don't know if I have another play, but I did want to touch on and at least mention, I did suggest Don't Stop the Music as the best opening line, but I do think that's like the heavy favorite right now for Rihanna at like -160 on Bet and Online. But I feel like now the play, after thinking about it a little bit more, like that's got to be the closing number. Basically more so than the opening one, but it kind of surprised me that was the favorite, but I think moving away from that and making it be the last song as opposed to the first song is a decent bet at +200, even though that's the favorite as well. I do think very much getting that plus money for that opportunity is the spot. I think you got to play some halftime novelty props, I would say.
Yeah, this is a Rihanna concert. There's just Mahomes and Hurts are just lucky to be a part of it. I've been looking for this over the past couple of hours and have been not able to find it. What are the first song odds for?
So this is Bet Online AG basically. So they have Rihanna's first song sang on stage, you know, is the category Don't Stop the Music -160. This Is What You Came For +400, which I think is sneaky there.
Yeah.
Diamonds +550, Umbrella +1000, Where Have You Been +1400, 14-1, Stay 14-1, What's My Name 20-1, and then kind of a conglomeration of ones between 20 and 40-1 that probably have no chance whatsoever, I would say. So I don't know.
What's Run This Town?
Run This Town is not listed from what I'm seeing, basically. They must get no Jay-Z love or whatever, huh?
Yeah, no. Vegas knows.
I was thinking, I was talking about this with some friends this weekend, and I was making the point, I was like, you know, there's no way Jay-Z's coming out to be a side piece. And then I was like,
right.
It is Rihanna, though. Like, he kind of takes pride in Rihanna. Like, you know, he's been it. Yeah. And I think he has a ton of respect for her as like a businesswoman as well. So I could see there being, you know, Beyonce just got a lot of love. She won like Grammy number 500. Maybe he wants to, you know, go out there and like it would be with Rihanna. So I don't know. I'm just gonna, Run This Town has an awesome open where it would just like make sense for that to be the first song, get everyone pumped up. And, I don't know. That was one that came to mind, but I agree with you. I like that. I like the was whatever that second favorite one was. Makes sense to me.
I think Diamonds and Stay have some interesting value there. I have one more real bet before we get into the really off the rails here. So you mentioned it earlier, George. We're talking about it. Look, yes, I get the Eagles have the most sacks, or, you know, top five of all time. Yada yada yada. Sacks are very much so controlled by quarterbacks, as we know. Patrick Mahomes is phenomenal at not letting pressures convert into sacks. Yes, he got sacked three times by the Bengals in their very last game, but before that, he had not been sacked three times since week 9. So there's a stretch of 10 games where he had not been sacked three times. And you can get Eagles under 2.5 sacks at plus 115. So I get they have a great pass rush unit. I get Mahomes is not, you know, 100%. I get it just happened in the AFC Championship game, but it was 10 weeks in a row where he had not gone over that number prior to that game. And the plus money aspect is what I like a lot about it.
Yeah, I like that one too. I think that's an opportunity to, you know, see, an opportunity where the number that the books are setting is influenced by what is seen as analysis, right? Which is the offense, offensive line versus the pass rush. And, you know, one of the things that we've studied is that, you know, the average time to throw, right, the thing that the quarterback actually is controlling more so than anything else, has the bigger impact on sacks. And so it really comes down to it being more of a quarterback stat than anything else. So you can kind of use that to your advantage here. Let's get into the really, really big novelty ones. Does anyone have anything before we get to the national anthem?
I think it's time.
Okay. So Chris Stapleton, you cannot find him singing the national anthem anywhere. I have tried. If you have found it, please DM me. Let me know. You are a better researcher than I am.
You'll get a free printing press hat.
You'll get multiple. Okay. You'll get multiple if you can find one. So here's the thing. Country singer, have there been country singers that have sung this in the past? Yes. Last male to do it, Luke Bryan, came in at just over 2 minutes and 3 seconds at 2:04. The time right now is 2 minutes and 5 seconds. It opened, I want to say, at like 1:59, and it shot up to 2:09. The thought process here is that Chris Stapleton is a country singer with a Southern drawl. He's going to carry out some of those notes. Luke Bryan carries out some notes in that national anthem. It isn't great. Okay. I like Luke Bryan. It's not like a Luke Bryan hate, segment here on the podcast, but I'm guessing that Chris Stapleton is aware that Luke Bryan sang it. There's not a lot of country singers that sing it. I'm not sure that he's going to want to drag out anything super long. I think he'll sing it kind of true to what he does, but I don't think that's going to be some really long ballad kind of situation. Now, I did compare some of the speed at which Luke Bryan and Chris Stapleton sing. That, to me, wasn't particularly conclusive. It was a little tough. Tennessee Whiskey, a popular song. And I think that Tennessee Whiskey, being a popular song that is sung in kind of a slow melodic way, is going to lead people to think the over is happening. So I say this to say, if you can get 2:05, I might wait a day or so, see if it creeps up a little bit. I'm going to take the under on 2:05. I don't think it's longer than Luke Bryan. If you listen to the Luke Bryan national anthem, like, as I said, I think if he had it back, he wouldn't drag those notes out quite as much because it wasn't great. So I don't think Chris Stapleton does. Going under. Now, there are, if you look around some books, like, there's a lot of disparity, right? Some places haven't moved it nearly as much. So you may want to take the middle if you can grab it. That's a pretty big chunk at 6 seconds. Just to look at some of the ones recently. So Mickey Guyton went in 1:52. That sailed over 1:37, which was her over-under. If you remember the great National Anthem Syndicate win of 2021, where Jasmine Sullivan and Eric Church did it together, as heard on this podcast, the over was a stone-cold lock of the century because they mispriced it for two people. They thought it was going to be one. Bunch of idiots. It soared over 2:16. That is the longest national anthem in history. Since Natalie Cole sang it in 1994, but very, very long. Demi Lovato, 1:49. Gladys Knight, 1:49. Pink, 1:53. And 2017, Luke Bryan at 2:04. For reference, Lady Gaga, who can actually really sing, she can carry out a note, came in at 209. So that is my national anthem research. I will continue to pound the pavement. I will continue to have my ear to the ground. And if anyone has anything to add, yeah, exactly.
It's perfect. So
anyone has anything to add, please let me know. Okay.
After hearing that analysis, I did come across another bet on Bet Online. U.S. National Anthem length of word brave over under 5 seconds. Under 5 seconds is at +150. I feel like with your notes synopsis, basically, and reading between the tea leaves, like that might be a lot going under 5 seconds as well. I don't know.
That was the greatest breakdown of all time.
Now I need to listen to the Luke Bryan brave again, because I need to time that out. See what it is. And now I'm going to be listening to Chris Stapleton and how long he carries. I'm going to find a word brave in his discography, and I'm going to measure it.
He strikes me as a hold on free and then hit brave pretty briefly, right? Like free is his long note. Ooh. And then he just kind of hits brave as like a, you know, get right to it. Kind of, knock it out and get it over with.
Yeah. Cause brave. Yeah. Free would make more sense to me as a known, historian of vocals, would make right. more sense to me for him to carry yeah. out as a country
singer. Yeah, checks out. So it's all about. So it's all about people. No one can follow. We're all just like,
I got nothing. Right. I'm betting the unders right now is what I'm doing.
I'm shopping
basically. So,
By the way, it does always get leaked. I think it was it last year that Warren Sharp, who was able to get the recording when it was rehearsed. That was in LA. It was a little fishy because he was working as doing some content for NBC at the time. And so I don't know if there's someone, maybe you're looking to follow someone that works for Fox this year and see if you can get some
I know the other angle, if we're really going to dive into it, the other angle, which may or may not have worked in my favor in years past, probably about a decade ago now, is if you happen to have friends that are in the armed services, first, thank them for their service. Second of all, ask if they know anyone who is performing or on the field for any component of the game related to the military service. And say, hey, while you're out there, maybe pull your phone out and press record when they start singing and press stop where they stop singing. Like I said, I may or may not have been able to utilize that in the past. You know, just a thought.
Our troops just continue to win. That's the moral of the story. That was our podcast. We will be back with you later this week. Thanks for hanging out.